入侵乌克兰以来，中国迟迟没有组织撤侨，中国公民何去何从？另外，乌克兰在抵抗俄罗斯入侵的同时，还面临新冠和小儿麻痹症等传染病的威胁。军事冲突如何影响疫情发展？大家好，欢迎收看美国之音的时事大家谈，我是叶凡。俄罗斯入侵乌克兰以来，居住在乌克兰的中国公民陷入困境。中国无视美国和西方国家的警告，没有采取撤侨行动。战争爆发后，中国驻基辅大使馆要求中国公民等到局势安全后再撤离，使得大约6000名中国公民进退两难。由于中国至今拒绝谴责俄罗斯的侵略行动，中国政府控制下的社交网站充斥着支持俄罗斯的言论，导致留在乌克兰的中国公民受到当地民众的反感，使得他们的处境更加困难。那目前乌克兰的局势如何？旅居乌克兰的中国公民面临什么样的处境？中国的立场会产生哪些连锁反应？上海民族党创办人、前外科医生何岸全前往乌克兰参加反对俄罗斯侵略的抗议活动，我们请他从乌克兰来介绍他这几天来的第一手见闻和感受。何先生，非常感谢您参加今天的访谈。
叶凡好，美国之音观众大家好。
那首先请您给我们讲一下，是什么让您这次前往乌克兰？您现在所在的地方是哪里？
我现在所在的地方是乌克兰西部最大的城市，叫利奥夫的这个城市。然后呢，有两个原因啊，这致使我到乌克兰来。第一个原因呢，就是以亲临啊战场的这个乌克兰的现场的一个方式来声援啊乌克兰的一个就是反对俄罗斯入侵乌克兰的一个这样的一个声援行动。另外一个原因呢，和美国之音也有关系，因为在二月初，美国之音呢有一篇报道说，格鲁吉亚的一个民间的一个兵团啊，在乌克兰帮助乌克兰民众啊训练进行军事训练，预防啊俄罗斯可能对乌克兰的一个侵略。对，所以这两个原因致使我到这边来。
那您现在在这个利沃夫局势如何？安全吗？
利沃夫呢，相对来说现在还是安全，因为战火呢还没完全波及到这里。战火大家都知道，主要是在发生在基辅还有东部的这些大城市。那么这边的民众呢，生活上面可以说用井然有序来形容啊，他们还是照样生活啊工作，但是呢，这个绝大部分的公司和商业呢已经停止了，还有绝大部分的这个餐馆，对，但是在民众呢，民众给我的感觉，他们就是临危不惧啊，知道这个战争即将发生啊，敌人可能侵略者可能到达他们的城市，但是他们没有恐惧，对，是这样。
那当地我们从一些视频上看到有一些这个庇护所啊。也在运行了，您看到的情况如何？政府有没有警告是做好准备？
是的，对，昨天晚上这里还也发生了一次就是空袭警报，然后广播大家就是不要外出啊，不要外出。那么和基辅首都不一样，这边呢没有地铁系统，所以呢大家有时呢主要是到这个楼层底下，还有这个到防空洞去啊，这个地下室去避难。对，区别就在这里。那么这边的民众在这个超市的供应还是相对来说还是比较丰富的，超市供应比较丰富。那么平时呢，就是一般的商店，我刚才说了，商店主要是我的感觉就是超市还在正常的营业。那么第一天我到这个利沃夫来的时候呢，半夜感觉到有点死城的一个鬼城的一个感觉，什么？就是大街上面空无一人啊，现在大家都看到了。这边还是人来人往，还是井然有序的在进行。但是到了晚上呢，因为商店和夜生活都没有了，因为毕竟这是一个现在已经是一个战区了，所以呢，晚上是空无一人，连出租车都没有。所以你晚我第一天来的时候呢，感到很恐惧，因为啥？因为我要到旅馆去，没有人问，没有人可以询问，也没有网可以上。对，是的。
但是这个战争啊，就是可能局势会瞬息万变，不知道这个什么时候战火就会延烧到利沃夫来了。
对，是的。
俄罗斯是世界上军事力量最大的一个强国之一了，它无论在海陆空、海陆空方面，它的实力都远远的压倒性的胜过了乌克兰。它的很多这个陆军啊，什么拥有的坦克和飞机，还有军舰，都是在全球数一数二，仅次于美国的。那我们知道，这个乌克兰民众和军队啊，非常英勇的在抵抗。有些这个平民他根本就没有使用过枪，现在也拿起枪来。妇女呢也在将这个瓶子做成燃烧弹。您感受到当地民众的气氛如何？
对，对，当地民众可以用全民皆兵来形容啊，他们已经国可以相信他们已经做好了走准备，准备一旦敌人侵略者到他们的城市来，他们就进行抵抗。我看到，这里的政府部门和警察局。我已经看到他们用这个沙袋做成了个掩体啊，随时准备迎接敌人的到来。然后呢，还有在像比较矮的窗户，他们也用沙袋把窗户掩盖住，就是怕呢，万一有炸弹或者导弹在这边爆炸呢，它的冲击波会炸碎这个玻璃，这个玻璃会刺伤里面的人。他们都用这个沙袋把这个最底层的这个窗户都把它这个掩盖住了。那么民众呢，我刚才说了，就是民众呢还非常警惕，可以全民皆兵到什么程度，如果有一个陌生人拿着手机和拿着这个手机是吧，或者拿着照相机在拍照，他们会过去会询问你是要对方出示护照把这个身份的 ID 要给他们看，因为已经有报道，就是俄罗斯的破坏分子会在他们的城市进行破坏活动。那么我已经分别遇到三次啊，第一次这个是一个糕饼店，我进去之后这个老板就要我亮身份，还有一次就是我是在这个他们的公共汽车总站啊，公共汽车总站我拍照片拍视频的时候呢，就是有民众主动过来问我是哪里来的啊，这个对，这都是给我印象非常深刻，还有是很感慨的这个，对。
那说到这个当地民众啊对外来人士的这个态度，那我们就想请问您，就是中国在这次的这个撤侨的问题上啊迟迟没有行动，那现在中国公民在当地的情况如何？
好，谢谢。这个我要回从两个方面来回答这个问题。第一个就是大家知道有一段视频啊，就是这个对乌克兰进行侮辱的一个视频已经在乌克兰民众广为流传了，造成什么？造成我也被询问到。那么我自己本身作为华人在这里确实也有人在询问，但是呢没有流露出很明显的歧视，除了我拿手机拍照的时候他们会来关心，希望我不要拍照，他们也告诉我这边现在是一个战争时期，希望能够得到我的这个理解这个。那所以呢，我作为华人在这边暂时还没有受到因为华人脸孔而歧视，虽然这个视频已经在乌克兰民众广为流传，这个第二点呢，就是说这个中国留学生这个撤侨的问题。那我有幸呢就是遇到有七位留学生三位女生四位男生，他们从基辅租车花了2000-3000美元租车从战火当中逃到这个利沃夫，然后从利沃夫呢坐火车离开乌克兰到波兰或者到其他国家去避难。那么他们告诉我中国政府一开始不给他们在撤侨最佳的时期，就是窗口期，就是俄罗斯还没入侵的时候，其他国家都在撤侨了，中国政府不要让他们待在这边原地不动不要原地不动，所以我说他们错过了一个很好的一个撤侨的一个窗口期，现在不得不冒着生命危险。为什么？因为大家知道俄罗斯的军队已经把基辅围起来了，他们从里面出来随随地都会遭到一个俄罗斯军队的一个攻击，网上面大家都看到了俄罗斯有受伤的这个中国公民。对，是的。
对，我们也看到报道有一位中国公民遭到了枪击。那这次中国的这个立场啊，他一直拒绝要谴责俄罗斯的这个侵略行动。那中国外交部发言人汪文斌说呢，中方坚决反对任何单边制裁。他说，我们要求有关方面在处理乌克兰问题和对俄关系的时候呢，不要损害中方和其他方面的正当权益。 中俄双方将继续本着相互尊重、平等、互利精神展开正常的贸易行动。您怎么看中方的这样的立场？
中方在这次俄罗斯侵略乌克兰的一个是非很明确的一个情况下，他采取一个可以说是间接支持俄罗斯的一个态度，我想他一定会为此付出代价。我想西方这个政府啊，欧美这个政府已经欧美政府和民众，尤其是乌克兰民众已经了解到中国政府的这个立场，所以也是造成中国留学生为什么这么恐慌啊？为什么恐慌？因为什么？因为中国留学生怕因中国政府的立场而造成他们在乌克兰会受到攻击。那么还有呢，就是中国政府现在这种支持啊，间接的支持俄罗斯侵略一个主权国家的立场，我想以后会一连串的这个经济制裁，欧美国家政府不会忘记把中国也捎带上去。那么大家知道，中美之间的贸易摩擦和他们的意识形态还有地域的政治的一个博弈，已经其实从川普总统的时候已经开始了。那么由于这次乌克兰事件呢，俄罗斯侵略乌克兰事件，我想会加深了加深欧美国家对中国政府这样一个倒行逆施呢，会有个更加明确清晰的立场。对，
乌克兰总统他在这个俄罗斯侵略乌克兰之前受到民众的抑郁，说他是一个喜剧演员出身，是一个非典型的政客。那这一次他在这个这场战争中啊，表现得非常的英勇，那也激励了乌克兰的这个士气了。当地民众现在这个现总统和现政府的这个态度是如何？
对，当地民众可以说现在非常支持他们的政府。因为什么？因为乌克兰民众热爱他的国家啊。当一个国家的一个民选政府领导他们为了保卫国家而战斗的时候，他们自然而然的同时啊团结在一起，包括支持现在的一个政府，支持他们的总统，对，在对俄罗斯的侵略者进行抗拒。对，大家刚才主持人也说了啊，这个男性是参军啊，那么参加战斗拿起武器，女性呢是做这个燃烧弹。
那还有这一次的一个就是让全世界都在广为流传的这样的一个事迹，就是俄罗斯在一个星期前，他的一艘军舰在入侵的时候，对守护一个战略要地蛇岛的乌克兰的海岸卫队的13名官兵喊话，说让他们放弃这个守卫要投降。结果这个乌克兰的13名的海岸卫队就非常勇敢英勇的说，俄国你们的船舰滚回去。那这件事情也成为就是乌克兰抗击俄罗斯的这样一个英勇的象征了。那这件事情在当地民众是怎么看待，他们的反应如何？
对，我和他们交流过程当中也感受到了他们什么勇敢无畏的这个精神啊，对这个保卫祖国，对自己的一个很正义的一个事业，他们的事业就是现在一个防御的啊，打击侵略者的事业，他们感从内心他们感到无比的一个自豪和充满了正义感，对他们为国捐躯的一个英雄啊，他们有无比的敬佩。他们不光是敬佩，大家都看到了，在视频当中大家都看到了，很多民众自发的到街上去阻拦俄军的一个坦克或者俄军的一个车队。所以呢，乌克兰民众不光他们崇拜自己的英雄，而且他们自己本身也是英雄。对，
我们看到这样的画面，乌克兰的民众只身站在俄罗斯的坦克前，阻挡俄罗斯队伍的前进。那俄罗斯的坦克并没有像我们想预料当中会开枪屠杀，而是有礼貌的请乌克兰的民众离开。这个在一定程度上反映了21世纪的年轻人对战争看法的改变啊，对这个捍卫民主自由和生命的尊重。
对，是的，大家都知道俄罗斯和乌克兰其实从几百年来说他们是同一个民族啊，后来由于一些历史事件他们分开了，他们互相之间有亲人在对边，另外对乌克兰有亲人，乌克兰人民有亲人在俄罗斯，同样反过来也是。所以呢，他们在冲突的时候呢，其实是也是有一个同样的目的，就是虽然我们是分了两个国家，但是呢，同样我们要捍卫民主和自由啊，对生命要充满尊重和敬畏。
那您这次接下来的行程是有什么样的计划，何先生？
对，我原先到基辅来的计划呢有两个目的，刚才说了，就是声援这个乌克兰，反对俄罗斯对乌克兰的一个战争威胁。因为我买机票的时候战争还没发生啊，我只是那时候只是存在一个什么一个战争的一个威胁啊。那么现在呢，情况发生了变化，已经成为战区了。我原先呢准备到这个乌俄基辅去和格鲁吉亚的这个海外军团取得联系，想对他们进行一些这个交流啊，想了解这种国际性的民兵组织是怎么运作的。对，但是现在战争已经发生，我曾经试图去基辅，但是因为战争已经发生了，我中途又折回来。毕竟这是一个战争瞬息万变的，随时随地如果基辅沦陷了，机械化部队过来是很快的。而且呢现在的好像形势呢，俄罗斯军队有一点在升级，就是他们的一个野蛮和残暴，对平民的这个无限制的这个轰炸和攻击已经发生了多起，所以呢我想这边可能会将来会变得很危险。
好，非常感谢何先生，请注意安全，多保重。
谢谢，谢谢一凡。
非常感谢上海民族党创办人、前外科医生何岸全从乌克兰为我们做的介绍。来宾发表的都是个人意见，并不一定代表美国之音。接下来，乌克兰在抵抗俄罗斯入侵的同时，还面临新冠和小儿麻痹症等传染病的威胁。战火如何影响疫情发展？请不要走开，我们马上回来。欢迎回到时事大家谈，我是叶凡。乌克兰在抵抗俄罗斯入侵的同时，还面临新冠和小儿麻痹症等传染病的威胁。几天前，乌克兰的奥密克戎感染人数刚刚创下纪录，现在避难人群拥挤在地铁站和庇护所，或者搭乘火车逃往邻国。战争阴云下，几乎没有人戴口罩，也没有社交距离。卫生专家担心，一场新的公共卫生危机一触即发。那这场武装冲突如何影响疫情的传播？被称为第三军的传染病会造成多大的平民伤亡？随着难民涌入邻国，地区性疫情爆发和病毒变异的风险有多大？今天我们邀请乔治城大学传染病专家、医疗产品获取安全和管理中心主任杰西·古德曼来分析和点评。Thank you so much, Dr. Goodman, for being here.
Happy to join you.
Russia's invasion of Ukraine may increase the spread of COVID-19, polio, and other infectious diseases as people pack the roads, trains, and shelters. Given Ukraine's only has 1/3 of population is fully vaccinated, Dr. Goodman, how dangerous is the situation?
Well, I do think it is quite a serious situation in terms of the spread of COVID and other infectious diseases. You have a wartime situation where people, as you noted, are being crowded together, not just in trains as they leave, but in shelters as they try to protect themselves from the war and the bombing. So it's really a situation where people are being brought close together. Their minds are on other things, their own survival and that of their family. And the attention paid to spread of infectious diseases is going to be a lot less and the risks a lot higher.
And it's understandably that people are not wearing face masks. And also Russia's invasion is also likely to hurt Ukraine's ability to track the virus as people also puts COVID prevention to the back burner. Since Omicron infection is most mildly or asymptomatic, how difficult is it to assess COVID increase in real time?
Well, we're already hearing how stressed the healthcare system is in Ukraine, just taking care of injuries, dealing with getting life-saving supplies of medicine, like we've heard that there are oxygen shortages. So I think when you can't take care of those most critical things, the other important things like routine disease surveillance, outbreak containment, become even more challenging. So I do think it's going to be hard to track the COVID outbreak. As you say, many cases are asymptomatic. And attention is going to be fastened on the much more serious problems they're facing, the injuries, the threats from war. But we will see an erosion of the containment of COVID and other infectious diseases, and it will place the population at additional risk.
WHO has warned Ukraine's hospitals could run out of oxygen supplies as Russia's invasion disrupts transportation across the country and putting thousands of more lives at risk. Do you expect the death toll to increase?
Well, I think if we can't have essential medical supplies like oxygen reach places in the Ukraine where they're desperately needed, then obviously the toll for many diseases, whether it's from war-related trauma, all the illnesses that will still go on during the war that require oxygen, situations like childbirth, heart attacks, and all the things like that, you know, we will see even more death and injury as the health system is stressed. Now, obviously, the people are showing incredible resilience and courage, and I expect that that will help mitigate some of these challenges. But still, when you have a war, the things that are not immediate and don't demand your immediate attention and the supply chain, as we've seen, can cause real problems.
The conflict may also spread COVID-19 to other countries as people are fleeing to Poland, Hungary, Slovakia, Romania, and Moldova. Do you expect to see another surge of COVID-19 in those countries?
Well, I think many countries in the region, including Ukraine, you know, have finally started to see their case numbers go down from this recent Omicron wave. And I do think as we bring large numbers of people together and mix different populations, again, the risk for spread of COVID and frankly, other infectious diseases will increase. And then, we've seen tremendous generosity so far on the part of many countries in receiving these refugees, but still initially, at least, they're going to be in crowded situations where refugees are processed, destinations are found for them. And as we know from so many similar tragic scenes we've seen over the years, these refugee situations are ones in which there can be a lot of spread of infectious diseases that we haven't talked about yet. But, you know, if critical infrastructure in Ukraine is hurt, for example, a safe water supply, sanitation, that can pose a whole bunch of other risks for spread of diseases that can be spread through sewage and lack of good water. So it's also going to be very critical for Ukraine and hopefully the international community to support Ukraine to protect its critical infrastructure like power, water, to really prevent this from being even more of a humanitarian disaster.
In your view, how would the war there impact the global efforts to end the COVID-19?
Well, I think it certainly can't help. I think there are two big things it's going to do. It is creating circumstances locally where a virus can spread. We don't know where the next variant will come from, but whether it comes from somewhere else in the world or that region, it's sort of mixing many people together from many different places can contribute to spread. And then additionally, the entire world is, you know, distracted from we were all hoping to be a phase of beginning to get more and more people vaccinated and to have containment of the impact of COVID. And I think sort of use of resources for things like wars and the attention to it will potentially distract from attention to continuing work to end the COVID outbreak. I hope not. I think the world can do both at once, but you know, it's a very challenging situation to deal with a global pandemic and then suddenly now a war in Europe.
The other issue is Ukraine has been trying to control a polio outbreak since last October. Dr. Goodman, how difficult is it to contain the transmission of polio? Are you worried?
Well, I am concerned. You know, it wasn't a major outbreak. There was one case of polio and several other people were found to have been exposed to or be excreting the virus. But what you need to do to contain those situations is get people in those areas fully vaccinated. So I don't personally know how much progress was made in that in the last couple of months, but I would be very concerned that in that region of the country, I believe it was the Northwest, that efforts to get all children and ensure they're fully vaccinated, those must continue. And again, for those to be disrupted by a war or failures of the public health system could be a real tragedy. I mean, we really are trying to eradicate polio globally, and it would be just awful if the disruption from the war got in the way of those efforts to contain, you know, a very small potential outbreak in the Ukraine.
So another COVID outbreak or infectious disease outbreak combined with the increasing number of people injured in the war would further strain Ukraine's already stretched health system. So how would that affect people with conditions such as diabetes, cancers to get treatment?
Well, again, clearly in a situation where either the health system is struggling to function, which is often the case in a war, or where there are supply problems, or where people feel unsafe to leave wherever they are sheltering, we can anticipate that people with chronic diseases, particularly elderly, children, et cetera, people who are already not healthy are going to be the most affected by shortcomings in the health system. So this puts everyone at risk, not just from the injuries, not just from the outbreaks, but from this very disruption, you know, of the fabric of society and healthcare in general. So, you know, it is a very dangerous situation, both for people who are directly affected by the war, but also for the whole nation that is indirectly affected by the war.
Dr. Goodman, last question. How would the world do to help in terms of humanitarian aid to Ukraine?
Well, it's been, you know, really gratifying to see the outpouring of support for the people of Ukraine as they go through this difficult situation. But I think it's going to be a huge effort for the World Health Organization, various non-governmental organizations to coordinate together and both help in any way possible with both materials and potentially to help in the health system and in the public health effort in Ukraine going forward. So it's going to take a big mobilization to try as much as possible to prevent some of these adverse complications from occurring. I believe the will is there on the part of the world, but there may be real challenges. We're seeing challenges in access to materials, you know, for the Ukraine. So will there be able to be safe passage of medical materials to the healthcare system? We're seeing apparent targeting of civilian areas. You know, that would be a very important thing to try to get agreement on both sides to stop. So, you know, I think there's a lot the world can do, hopefully, to de-escalate the conflict, but also to then support the Ukrainian people and the Ukrainian health system.
Thank you so much, Dr. Goodman, for your time.
Sure, you're very welcome.
非常感谢乔治城大学传染病专家、医疗产品获取安全和管理中心主任杰西·古德曼的分析和点评。来宾发表的都是个人意见，并不一定代表美国之音。感谢您收看《时事大家谈》，我是叶凡，下次节目再会。